The heat is excruciating. Even in the air-conditioned bucky, I can feel it pressing down on the roof, pushing its way through the steel. But I'm not really thinking about the heat right now. I'm clinging on for dear life as the bucky bounces along a dirt road only accessible in a 4x4. It doesn't stop for a moment. Up and down I bounce, first hitting my head against the back of the seat and then the roof. I lock my right hand around the handle above me in the attempt to stabilize myself. It doesn't seem to make one bit of difference, though. My second hand is out of commission as it is wrapped around my camera. I glance over at David, who is sitting to my left. He is struggling even more than me. Not only is he bigger than I am, but he is also protecting the lifeline of our documentary, his Canon 300C. He doesn't complain, though. How typical, I think, with amusement. Filmmakers are mostly the same. Kitten story first, body, safety and health a distant second. While we suffer in silence, the two officials in the front chat away happily about logistical changes they've made in the park. They seem blissfully ignorant of our antics in the back. I realized it must have been some time since they last saw each other, because they've been talking non-stop since we left the manager's office. I want to listen and pay attention, but no, my mind is racing and my body is being moved willfully out of control. Ever so often, the driver throws his chin over his shoulder and asks us if we are still all right. We're an hour into our two-hour drive, and yes, remarkably, we're still fine. The third member of our team, Jeff, didn't come with us this time. He said he'd rather not expose himself to the scene we're filming today, and after the month he's had on the production, I can understand why he needs a bit of a break. I myself am both exhausted and rather apprehensive about what I'm about to witness. Over the last 2 months, I rarely had a moment to myself. When I did find the odd hour or two, I spent it chasing contacts or used the opportunity to telephone home to Vienna. Last night, during one such moment after dinner, I found myself calling my father, who, with a similar personality to me, seemed to understand the reasons behind my hesitation. I told him about my concern of becoming another one of those filmmakers who found more value in the bankable images that shock, rather than those less exciting images that force people to evaluate themselves. Throughout the production of Horn, I've been adamant to concentrate almost exclusively on the human side of the rhino poaching crisis. With people, that is where everything starts and ends. However, I've just been told that as of August 2013, no other filmmaking team has yet been allowed access to film a freshly poached rhino carcass in the affected region, let alone a forensic dissection. Naturally, this was an exciting opportunity. At the same time, I realise, apart from the two people helping me shoot the film, this project has so far been a one-woman show. The likelihood that I would get any images out before the BBC, ITV or some other big broadcaster released a program was slim to none. So the exclusivity of the images didn't appear to have any bearing here. That wasn't what was bothering me anyway. The more programs about what is happening in South Africa, the better, I'd say. What bothered me more was whether showing a mutilated carcass would, in actual fact, distract from the film's social and political statement. Well, would it? I asked. After all, my mission is to probe why we as a country are allowing this to happen in the first place, not what is being done to the animals. We all know what's happening to them and how brutal it is. I wanted the film not to be an attempt to foreground the facts of rhino poaching. I wanted it to rather shine a critical yet hopeful life on the social side of poaching, on the economic and cultural reasons that allow for poaching to flourish inside South Africa. One should therefore predominantly be a film about the people who are living in and around heavily poached areas. It should show the rhinos could contribute to rebuilding a fast declining nation, provide employment, housing development, and social cohesion. It should show the animal alive, kept healthy and protected, instead of ruthlessly exploited for the sake of short-term profit by a few. You've been saying that all along, my father reassures. Of course, I have. But also, the nagging thought entered my mind. Do I really want to see a mutilated rhino in the flesh? If that wasn't enough, I was told it was a black rhino. I've been a bush-going girl for as long as I can remember, but the black rhino is a species that I saw for the first time only yesterday. Does the second black rhino I ever get to see really have to be a poached one? In the end, my father didn't have to say much, really. He patiently took on the role as a very expensive international sounding board. My monologue culminated into the conclusion. As a filmmaker, I have no right to say anything about wildlife crime without evaluating my subjective reaction upon witnessing the effects of this kind of crime. So it was settled.